You're listening to Real Conversations with Jacob Young. Real Conversations is sponsored by Boys Town, saving children, healing families for over 100 years. And they're literally changing lives of girls and boys every single day. Please go to boystown.org to learn how you can help support Boys Town. RCJY is also sponsored by Lane Frost Brand, made for the champion in you. Everything from hats to hoodies, something for the whole family. And hey, use Jacob15 to save 15% on anything and everything. Lane Frost Brand. My guest this week is a 1980s television icon. You know her as Sarah Rush, the daughter of TV legend Ted Knight, in the hit comedy Too Close for Comfort. After all these years, this show still airs twice a day on Antenna TV and streams on Tubi. She was guest star on TV classics like The Love Boat, Fantasy Island, Super Password, HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm. Among her many awards, she's received the Côte d'Azur TV Icon Award, a Golden Halo Lifetime Achievement Award from the Southern California Motion Picture Council, and the very first Elizabeth Montgomery Humanitarian Award. My guest this week is the beautiful writer, director, actress, producer, and humanitarian, Lydia Cornell. You know what time it is. It's time to keep it real with Real Conversations with Jacob Young. Lydia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Jacob. Those introductions always sound so elaborate and flamboyant. All of us actors have so many things going on, but thank you. And I love all the work you're doing. I'm blown away by this.
Oh, thank you. Now, you've been invited to contribute your writings to the International Museum of Peace, which houses letters from people like Mother Teresa. Now, your great-great-grandmother was the historic writer Harriet Beecher Stowe. How has being her descendant inspired you as a writer?
Oh, my goodness. I think it's in the genes. And I'm no comparison, of course. You can't compare. But in her era, remember, women weren't allowed to vote. So she had to write a book to convince the people who could vote, only men, that slaves, that black people, that African-Americans were actually human beings, that they had lives of their own. And I've been researching her for years, and I just finally am including some of her stories in my book. But I had another great-grandmother, Callie Fairley, the first vice detective in the Wild West.
Oh, wow.
So she rescued prostitutes, bailed them out of jail, and then took them home and rehabilitated them and fed them. And then she would raise their children and put them with my mother's mother. So my mom was raised with all sorts of strange children in the home.
Well, you come from a long line of powerful women.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That is cool. Now, on television, you're probably best known as the legendary Ted Knight's blonde daughter, Sarah, on the classic Too Close for Comfort. How do you overcome the stereotypes that blondes are ditzy in your up-and-coming book, Hiding My Brain in My Bra?
Well, I have some really hilarious Hollywood horror stories, but they're all funny. Everything has become very funny to me. And actually, when I got sober 28 years ago, everything became funny. The gift of spirituality brought me this sense of absurdity about life, able to laugh at myself and see what a jerk I was all those years and how silly I was. But I started out writing, I got a Bachelor of Science degree in business. I was in every play in high school wanting to be an actress, but I realized you couldn't make a living in the arts, I was told by everyone.
Sure.
But I made a beeline for Hollywood as soon as I graduated, with a little detour at Caribou Ranch in Colorado to work in the music industry. And I was never a dumb blonde, but I had to dumb myself down to get along in Hollywood. And I started writing a book on Stalin's plot to kill Trotsky, an actual book. I had gotten the original photographs of the Trotsky assassination from a producer I was working for at Jack Webb in 1979. And I wrote this book, took it to CAA. They grabbed it, said, "We want to represent you. We love the book." And then I got the part on Too Close for Comfort. So I had to really play a ditzy, you know, and no one ever took me seriously after that.
Yeah.
I had a really crazy, wild audition.
Well, that is, what a great story. And something you just said that really resonates with me is you had learned how to laugh at yourself.
It's the key. To me, it's the key to survival. Everyone has different tools, but you cannot take yourself too seriously. And there's a great quote I've heard: where the world is a loose garment, I thought that Christ said it, but it's St. Francis, and I never knew where I heard it. But that kind of feels, don't attach yourself too much to shame, blame, or praise. That's a Zen Buddhist teaching, actually. And don't take yourself too seriously. You have to be able to navigate life with humor or with grace or with some sort of poise and not take everything personally, because that's, emotions can hurt us, can actually kill us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've been fighting with that my entire career. It's yeah. You know, as you know, it's like you're under a spotlight, and I've had to learn to really kind of let go and detach too. And that's really kind of like why we have this. I created this podcast so people can hear about the different hurdles and such that we've all had to overcome to get to where we are and get to where we are, you know, in our hearts as well. And I know, speaking from the heart, that you've experienced some tremendous losses in your life and losing significant loved ones. We all face grief, you know, all of us sooner or later in our lives. How have you learned to cope with the grief over these years?
Oh my goodness. I have a very strong, I'm not religious per se, but I had a catastrophic, I call it a catastrophic spiritual awakening when I first walked into this 12-step program the day of, after a really scary moment in my life. And I just had a brand new baby. And it was actually 6 months after he was born. And I heard something in this room. And it was, I walked into the room and I heard someone at the podium say, if you've wandered into this room and you don't know you have trouble, you're have an addiction or an alcoholic problem, let's put it this way. Virgins don't take pregnancy tests. And the whole room roared with laughter. And I felt, wow, what does that mean? And then I admitted I had a problem. And at that moment, admitting it was my first surrender. Mm-hmm. I was covering, hiding, masking, trying to be perfect my whole life, trying to look good. The biggest curse for women, and I think for this industry, is we're looking good all the time, putting up a front. And I had to do that my whole life because I was raised by a very Texas mom who had every hair in place. I had to have white gloves on at all times. And I could not live up to this. So that's why I was a rebel underneath. But anyway, then that first year of sobriety, my baby brother died. I found his body, and he'd only tried drugs 3 times. Sorry. He was so fragile and so precious, and he was a concert pianist, and he was a gifted kid, but he couldn't quite fit in. I think he had ADHD. We found all these articles he'd cut out before he died, and he was self-medicating. And I kind of had to stay there. I had this great wisdom of spiritual. I had the sobriety, which brought me a kind of magic wisdom. I've got to tell you, there's some force in the universe bigger than us. Call it love, call it God, call it infinite love, I call it, that can lift you up out of despair when you stop wrestling with your own ego too much and you stop trying to solve your own problems too much, when you're in your head too much. Mm-hmm. And you have to let go. And I let go, and I believed in the universe, universal love, which I now call God, good orderly direction. And I was able to sustain, to be there for my mother and my family through his death. Mm-hmm. And then I called his longtime girlfriend he'd had for 10 years, Vicky. She was now, they had broken up, but she was so in love with him, and they were in love with each other for many years. She was a vice president, Neiman Marcus in Dallas. And I told her that Paul had died. And she said, I'm driving right now. I'm going to come to the funeral tomorrow. I'll drive from Dallas. She drove through Denver in the snow, drinking. Mm. God bless her. And she had a head-on collision, killed an entire family of an 8-year-old boy and herself. And this was like, this is a disease that there are only 3 ways out. It's death, institutions, prison, or sobriety, right. You know? It's like a physical disease.
Yeah.
Dis-ease. So anyway, it's hard to talk about it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And speaking of things being challenging, of course, this sort of grief and going through the things that you've gone through and some of the things that I've gone through in my life, you know, down around the holiday season, it can be a little extra tough. Do you have any advice? I love some of the things that you're telling, and maybe you already answered it, but do you have any advice to deal with emotional pain during the holiday season?
Okay, I think any group of friends that understand you and get you and love you, the fellowship of the spirit I love going to meetings, by the way, but, or any loved ones. And if you don't have anyone, it's really all inside you. That's where they call the kingdom is inside you. Everything's inside of us. And there's a great Tao saying, once you've attained wholeness, everything will flock to you. Tao 22. Mm-hmm. All the great spiritual wisdom comes from the same source. But it really is an inside job. You've got to go deep within and find out it won't kill you. There's a woman? Pema Chodron, a Buddhist monk. Mm-hmm. She teaches that you must breathe in the pain and feel that it won't kill you. You know, I've had people who've gone through way worse tragedies than I've ever gone through, and they're able to learn these meditation techniques of getting in touch with your deepest source, your inner wisdom, the highest part of your human nature, and find out it's pure love. Love is our motivator. Love is our divine birthright. Mm-hmm. And whenever I'm really in fear, I have to be still. I don't. I also often go crazy a little in my head, and I worry and I ruminate. But if I let go and be still, an answer will come that's higher than the answer I could have come up with. And loneliness is a seeking of love also. So during this grief of this season, my brother died on December 1st. Years ago, I tend to distract myself. And that's another form of prayer. It's to withdraw your attention from your enemies and they expire from neglect. Our enemies are usually our worries and fears, really. Mm-hmm. It's a state of consciousness. So I will go see Christmas lights, drive around, you know, smell pine tree needles. I go anywhere I can to find that nerdy Christmas feeling, which I'm so in love with.
Yeah.
Because I think that was the happiest time of my life. So distract yourself, make some hot cocoa. Go volunteer. If you want more love in your life and you want less sadness, do something for others. Go out and help someone who's less fortunate than you. That always helps, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. I tried, you know, it's taken many years. I mean, I'm still a young man. I'm in my 40s. But
you're young.
It took me, you know, many years of realizing, wow, the way that I felt the most amount of love was by giving back. And that love does. It does come back to you. And
exactly.
It's pretty amazing. Now, among many humanitarian causes of yours is being a teen mentor. The Boys Town National Hotline is also available to teens and their families that are in crisis. As a mentor and a child advocate, what are some of the most common issues and challenges that you hear from teens and children?
Well, for girls, and I've been working with women's issues for years, because I went through the same thing. It's having to feel like you're not thin enough, good enough, perfect enough, pretty enough. Being bullied sometimes by people that can be hateful online. Young girls especially are having 13-year-olds, apparently. 13 to 15 is the highest suicide rate.
Yeah.
And that's, we've got to solve this. It's, and we've got to solve this fentanyl opioid problem. I'm going to be working with the state legislature of California and some college students on fentanyl preventive measures. They have these strips that you test in people's drinks that you can take with you. I'm going to talk about that more later. We're just getting into it. But
yeah,
for young people, it's the self-esteem, the worthiness. Our society tends to compare each other too much. And young boys, I write stand-up comedy, so I always do this one line. I raised 3 boys and 2 dogs, including my husband, and they all went through puberty at the same time. But I adore little boys. And I was kind of happy I didn't have a girl first, because I didn't want to re-raise me. You know, I just have a real soft spot for little boys. Yeah. Having raised them, they're just the most precious creatures on earth. And my own son is 28 now. My stepson's 26. And it was so delightful. And it's like, I wish they would call me. They don't call me as much as they used to. But I raised my kids with a lot of love and not fear. And I kept trying to instill in them to be kind to others. And my stepson was bullied. He had osteogenesis imperfecta, which is brittle bone disease.
Yeah, sure. Wow.
So he couldn't touch his chin when he started to shave or button. And we had a lot of birthdays and bar mitzvahs to go to. And I had to help him. And every time he fell, he would think he was breaking every bone in his body. And I would see him falling on a bed of clouds and just pick him up and not put him in more fear. Like some people panic and they, the kid becomes very neurotic, right?
Yeah, sure.
So a lot of success happened by really just being calm, reflecting love back, letting them know they're loved. Now, if they don't have a parent, a lot of kids, it's really hard to find it within. You need to find a mentor. You need to find a big brother, a big sister. Mm-hmm. We need to help our young people more online. What are your solutions? I'd love to hear, you know.
Well, I'm learning every day as a parent myself and listening to, and I've visited Boys Town many times now and, you know, had family dinners with the kids. And, you know, it's really the biggest thing that was missing in their lives, other than, you know, probably what everything they were neglected from in their personal lives with the families that they were living with, was love. And being able to nurture that and give them a little bit of support, you know, emotionally support them in their daily lives. And I've seen multiple young people's lives completely turn around, where they were failing school, they didn't see any kind of future in sight, and by going to the place that they thought would be like a prison. Because they thought, this is a prison, and it's anything but, because there is no fences, there is no gates, there is no, the doors are unlocked, you know, I mean, they keep it, they have security and things like that, but it's they realize that they have that support that they needed, and they change. But, you know, I think you're right. Online social media has been a massive, for me as a parent, that's one of the things that I look at as being one of the major issues. They're living in a false reality, and there's a lot of things that they start to lean on or believe that is the truths. And I'm like, I'm thankful. Like I thought I grew up with enough problems, but I'm thankful that I didn't have to grow up today and be constantly put on a spotlight. As far as like, oh, how cool are you? How many followers do you have? This is the real world. And it's just not that. So I try to make sure that for my son, who's now 14, he's a teenager, is impressionable, but at least, you know, I'm making sure that he's doing the right thing, making the right choices online. And I feel like that's been a massive thing that has been a big problem. And that's one thing that Boys Town does, is they take their phones away from them. Immediately.
Oh, good.
So the entire time that they are there, whether they're there the rest of their whole high school career, they don't allow them until they have the option of staying even after high school. I love this program. It's a brand new program that they just instilled there, mm-hmm. where if they don't feel like they're ready to go on to live on their own, they now can rent a beautiful, bigger apartment than I had in New York City. and they set them up TV, but you know, a lot of these kids, their parents have actually used their credit to, like, you know, pay their, you know, water bills. So these kids, so most of them don't even have any kind of, you know, credit report to speak of, or it's their credit's in massive decline. Yeah. And so they get their credit straight for them, but the rent that they're paying from those jobs, it all goes into a bank account. And they can stay there till they're like 26 years old.
Oh my goodness.
If they choose.
I love Boys Town.
And these kids, they have a great, and they'll get them a brand new car. They get them on the right track. You know, and these kids, you know, there's obviously special cases, but they needed that support. And it's amazing.
I can't believe, this is the most amazing. Boys Town has always been in my heart ever since the movie with Father Flanagan and Mickey Rooney. Yeah. But this, I'm so thrilled to be with you today talking about it, because I've always been a fan of Boys Town, and that you just reminded me, I didn't know they were doing such good work still.
Yeah.
And it's not just boys, right? It's families.
It's all families. It's girls. Boys and girls. And, and you know, that was a big controversy for a while. There was the previous father that was there before Father Bays, who's there now. He changed they wanted to change the name. They wanted to change it to Girls and Boys Town. And they did that for a time. But what had happened was people were confusing it with Boys and Girls Club. Donations were not being, you know, met, and they were nervous that that's what had happened. And so they went back to the original original name, but the work is still going on. I can tell you it's a pretty incredible place. Now you were talking a little bit about addiction. Now I got addicted to opioids myself. It started as a dental procedure, and it was Vicodin, and then it went on to all the other stuff, you know, so I've known multiple friends or acquaintances, or my brother-in-law's, some of his friends that he went to school with have OD'd and died, unfortunately, because of that. Let's talk a little bit about that. And what do you think needs to happen in order to get this fentanyl addiction, and obviously the drugs that are being, I don't know, is it across the border or how they're being, you know, brought into the United States, or how do we get under control?
I think every school needs to have counselors that come in and talk about, okay, here's something very interesting. I'm going to do a show. It's like a Forensic Files, the reverse version, about the magic in life, but I'm trying to prove the power of the spiritual program that I've gone through. There's no other fix for alcoholism or addiction, by the way. You can't take a pill for it. You can't take another drink for it. There's no medicine you can take to conquer it. It's really your thinking and the love that you're filling up, the love. And of course, addiction is, most people who are addicts, I hate to say this, have had some trauma in their childhood, some lack of love, some unworthiness, not a good parental figure around to help them. And if we can get to the root of it, and these things work, this program really works that I'm in, that I was in. I only go now to help other people because I really had the addiction removed. Bizarrely enough, in one moment 28 years ago, and I was a radioactive fall down drunk. Mm-hmm. And I literally, but not every day, just periodic. The first drink is the poison that would take the second drink. Mm-hmm. The first pill, you need another pill. If you can avoid the first one, your brain isn't diluted or poisoned into needing the second one. Mm-hmm. So it's the drug, the first one you avoid. And I've never had a craving since that first day. I had so many supernatural, I call them God shots, small g, not religious, but synchronicities that were so uncanny that I realize now with quantum physics, you can prove this through science, that love can be scientifically proven as the unified field in a weird way. And I really, that's why I love what you just told me before the show, gave me chills, about proving that love heals. Mm-hmm. So in this program, I want to prove, what is this spiritual part that's missing from everyone's life? You can't just go into school to go stop drinking, stop smoking, stop doing opioids. Saying stop doesn't help people. It's getting to the root of it without talking too much about the past, but getting to the root core of what is it that we're needing to fill up. The spirits in alcohol used to fill up the spiritual power I found after that, you know? Mm-hmm. But you can't talk about religion in school. So we need some sort of program to go into schools and talk about the other way to think. Yeah. And there are, you know, I had a cop friend in the program who is an atheist, and you know, a lot of us don't believe in any organized religion, but I do love, I've kind of gone back to my original church. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying that he spent 37 years he was a for 37 years he's been sober. He busted a coke dealer 39 years ago at the back alleys of LA. The coke dealer went to prison and became the cop's sponsor later. The cop keeps saying, I don't know how I'm staying sober. I don't believe in God, but it must be storytelling, telling each other stories in this room. It's like love in the flesh. That's mm-hmm. That could be called God. That could be called the higher power.
Sure.
Simply helping others, mm-hmm. talking, bringing in the fellowship of the spirit into these rooms. I don't know. I'm going on and on too long, but I really think there's a solution that isn't medical.
I am with you 100%. I think there definitely needs to be some sort of program that's integrated into public schools. I mean, when I was a kid, it was DARE, but it was like, look, if you do drugs, you're gonna go to jail. There wasn't about the emotional consequences as much as it, and dealing with what the problem really is, other than the fact it was on the streets, which was a great program. You know, Nancy Reagan, right? She was the one that put it out there. But, you know, there needs to be something in there in the program or in the school programs today that they can get into, they can talk to their peers, talk about their personal experiences.
Also the dangers. Remember the commercial, this is your brain, on drugs, it's like a fried egg. Well, the truth is drugs do actually, I had a friend who was a crystal meth addict and his entire jaw was eaten out by meth and showing people horror stories. I don't know if that would work. Maybe a combination of that with the Fellowship of Love, you know, some sort of group therapy where you can go and you can keep yourself private. It can be completely anonymous in schools or having people come lecture and speak in this language. And then, of course, you know, we've got to get rid of the fentanyl itself. I don't know how easy it is to make. At the border, they did catch the largest amount ever caught recently.
I read that actually.
And
I'm glad, so I'm glad they're cracking down on it. It's incredibly toxic. I was watching this story of this kid in San Francisco recently. He's 19 years old. He's on the streets. And, you know, this guy has been keeping tabs on him because he's trying to help kids get off the streets. And this kid was from a good family, but he's literally, you know, he's addicted to fentanyl. And they're like, aren't you worried about dying? He's like, Fenty? Oh, no, no, I'm not worried about
it. Oh, my God.
But, you know, the reality is the very next time he does it, it could be the last. Because it's incredibly powerful. And but it's nice to see those stories where people are actively going out there and trying to help. And I think that's what it's going to take. It's every single state is going to have to put something into legislation to make the difference.
Yeah, and that we teach children. See, kids' brains aren't formed yet till they're 26, I heard.
Mine's still not formed.
I think mine isn't either, frankly. Actually, yeah, layers and layers were peeled away this year. My mother died in April 2021. Bless her heart. Oh. And she was 92. And so many things were revealed after she died. Letters I found. And I lost a lot of my old. We had a huge forgiveness in our lives. We had to go through and. I don't know. We keep growing. We're a work in progress, all of us, you know, and can't give up before the miracle.
That's so true. What a great way to look at it. Now, for anyone who hasn't enjoyed, of course, the classic comedy, Too Close for Comfort, it does air twice a day on Antenna TV, or you can binge watch it every season on Tubi. What's new in the pipeline for your fans to look forward to?
Well, the book should be coming out as soon as I finish. I have to turn it in now because I had written a completely comedic version of, you know, really funny, raising aliens, life with boys, living with a Neanderthal, you know, one night in a restaurant, all these funny stories about my marriage. And I realized, oh, I forgot the showbiz stories. And I put them all in, meeting Natalie Wood when I first got to Hollywood. She got me my first job with Aaron Spelling and my crazy audition stories and all the showbiz, navigating, trying to keep my clothes on. I've never done nudity, but I was almost tricked into going topless. And I outwitted in the Greek Isles. I was starting a movie with James Earl Jones and Jose Ferrer, and I outwitted them. James Earl Jones was wonderful, but the producers wanted me to dive in the ocean topless.
Yeah.
And I figured out, the Greek wardrobe lady and I figured out, put zinc oxide over your body. And then they can't use the footage. And so it was like, you had to do those things in those days.
Sure.
So the book is about how to get through life and keep your soul intact. It's kind of like how to find your soul in a pornographic world. And I'm also had a 12 episode crimedy in there about my stalker, which turned out to be very funny. No one else thought it was funny at the time. So I'm going to probably, there's someone interested in making the book into a series.
Oh, awesome.
But yeah, it would be fun. You could be in it.
Yeah.
You're working.
I'd love to.
Yeah. But we've also written, my boyfriend, he wrote Seinfeld. He's won Emmy Awards for all sorts of, he got Emmy nominated for a couple of series he wrote and a WGA Award for Seinfeld episode he wrote and lots of shows he wrote in the 80s and 90s. So we wrote a reboot script for Too Close for Comfort.
Oh, that would be fantastic. And
it's pretty funny. And the producers gave me the rights to go forward with it. So we'll see what happens. They weren't buying comedies recently, but we're going to be pitching it in the spring.
Fantastic.
And the whole cast is on board. Head Knight died, though, and that's tricky.
Yeah.
The only show that kind of succeeded in a reboot form was Roseanne, because she's no longer in that show, The Conners.
Yeah.
But we have a pretty good substitute for baby Andrew, who grew up. He was the baby in 19. If you know the show, Too Close for Comfort, in 1983, our parents had a baby late in life. Now, he would be 38 now. So Adam Scott and John Hamm did a really funny spoof of our show, of our opening. It was hilarious. It's on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
So they might be, I don't know.
Have you talked to them?
I'm going to reach out to Adam Scott soon. He's a huge fan of the show.
That would be great.
It would be. And Catherine O'Hara played our mom in this thing. It's a really funny thing on Adult Swim.
Wow.
So we'll see.
Well, you've got your plate full for sure. That's really awesome that, you know, so many things are going on. And of course, your boyfriend, he wrote for a little show called Seinfeld.
And I did Curb. We're both friends with Larry. And my boyfriend is Larry Levy, Lawrence H. Levy. He's also an author of books. He wrote 4 murder mysteries at the turn of the century for Penguin Random House called Second Street Station, about a female detective at the turn of the century in Brooklyn, New York, during the Tesla Edison energy market fight.
The feud that was going on between them. That's such an interesting story to begin with.
I know.
Yeah.
He wrote historical mysteries, and now he wrote a new book. But yeah, it's a very fascinating time.
That's cool. Tell our listeners, you know, where they can follow you, keep up, social platforms, any of that.
Okay. My website, lydiacornell.com, is not updated, but I have my Twitter and Facebook links on there. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and I haven't done TikTok yet. Have you?
I gave up like within the first two videos. People will say, well, you're a good dancer, Jacob, but like, I've just never been that kind of person to I like to do funny things, but I guess maybe I'm just not going light enough on myself.
Yeah. I mean, one day I've got to try it, but I also have a YouTube channel, Lydia Cornell Comedy Therapy. And it's got a mix, though, of things, because it has the trademark I have, Godshots Mental Health, Godshots Recovery and Mental Health Podcast. We've done 27 episodes like you are, you know, on Zoom with guests who've overcome everything. I mean, real. I have one on Thursday, Vinnie Keller, who had 2 strokes and 3 heart attacks. And he survived to tell the tale. So we're going to hear his story.
Awesome. Yeah. No, I mean, there's been some great guests on this podcast as well that have overcome some serious hurdles, like Lilo Brancato. You know, he was in Bronx Tale and Sopranos. And then he went to jail for that drug bust and shooting a cop. But he's completely sober now. And obviously he's reformed and...
I love this.
He would be great for your podcast or for YouTube. I know he would be willing to jump on. I always ask 2 questions more, just 2, just for a little bit more of your time. If you could take a ride in a Jacob Young time machine, what advice would you give 14-year-old Lydia?
Oh, boy. Love yourself and spread that love to others and stop worrying about every little thing. Get out of your head and enjoy life. Life is meant to be enjoyed, and I never knew that.
So true. And the last one is Boys Town's motto, which is, he ain't heavy, he's my brother. And the original, obviously, story was when Father Flanagan was still alive back in the 40s, maybe even a little bit earlier, turn of the century, when they barely had any medical equipment for some of the boys. And one of the boys couldn't walk. And so the other boys would take turns carrying him to football games and to class. And one day Father said, isn't he heavy? And he said, he's not heavy, Father. He's my brother. Meaning in our lives, we've had somebody carry us from time to time. Who's carried you, Lydia?
Oh, Michael Steindl, who passed away in 2017, came into my life as this kind of savior, a wonderful, just this best friend I'd had for years. And I was talking to him. Oh, I love Michael. And he died suddenly. We were talking on the phone. I was taking care of my parents, who both had, my mother and stepfather had dementia. And Michael and I spoke. Michael was a curmudgeon and he hated Christmas. He pretended to hate Christmas. And we called and talked to each other for 4 hours on Christmas Eve. And he said, bah humbug. I said, you better call me tomorrow. And he goes, I won't call you on Christmas, but he always did. And the next day I couldn't reach him, and for 4 days couldn't find him. And apparently he fell off the bed and had passed away. And I called the police, and you know what? I carry a torch. I carry a candle for Michael because he helped me through the hardest times of my life. After my divorce, when I almost lost everything, I just want to say, I love you, Michael. There's always someone in your life that you can look on, look back on who's helped you.
100%. I have an army of people.
Yes.
Well, Lydia, I want to say thank you so much for joining me today, sharing your personal stories and all your great insight and advice to our listeners. You've entertained, inspired, and helped so many generations of children and adults. Thank you for your contribution to society. You're a person who has really made a difference in this world, and you can never be too close for comfort in all of our lives. So I'm wishing you continued success.
Thank you so much, Jacob. It's really an honor and a gift and a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's about all the time we have for this week, but the Boys Town toll-free national hotline, 1-800-448-3000, is a 24/7 crisis resource referral number for kids, their parents. They're always there to help anyone having suicidal thoughts, risk of any self-harm, parenting problems, physical, sexual, or emotional abuse, stress, anxiety, anger problems, school problems like bullying, peer pressure, or chemical dependency. If you're suffering with any of these issues or just need someone to talk to, they're there for you 24/7. The Boys Town National Hotline, 1-800-448-3000. Don't feel like talking? You can text VOICE to 20121. Someone will get back to you immediately. Boys Town, saving children, healing families. Until next time, love each other and love yourself.